Welcome to Tax Justice Warriors, a podcast that celebrates the work of low-income taxpayer clinics and talks about issues related to tax news. I'm your host, Omid Farouzi, professor of practice and director of the Low-Income Taxpayer Clinic at Temple Law School. So we're in a series now in the Tax Justice Warriors podcast of interviews I conducted with colleagues and students of mine at the Temple Law LITC. This is an interview I conducted of my student Randy. Randy was a student of mine in the fall 2023 semester. We conducted this interview in February 2024. Randy, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So Randy, tell us what drew you to the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic.
All right, so I took the general tax class in the previous year, academic year, and one of the things that stuck with me was Professor Abreu talking about The Whiteness of Wealth, which is a book by Darth Brown, and kind of exploring the intersection of tax and race. And I found it fascinating because for me, tax is all about numbers and money. So I didn't realize that there was this whole subsection of tax that deals with people who are low income, and actually because we're dealing with people who are low income by the way the United States is structured, we're going to deal with racial minorities. So I thought that that's just something like very fascinating, and I wanted to kind of have an opportunity to know more about it, but also to work in issues that the clinic would allow me to work on. Getting that practical experience of like dealing with tax controversies and everyday issues that people have with their taxes.
That is a major thing that I want people to get out of the class, in fact, is just how intertwined it is with race and with aspects of economic and social justice, and how you see the racial impact of a lot of the different choices Congress has made in the tax code. So that's something we actually talked about, as you recall, in those first couple of classes. And based upon what we talked about through the tool the Tax Policy Center has and the choices Congress has made and the way audits have developed what were two or three takeaways you had from those courses?
Absolutely. So a couple of things. We talked a lot about the Earned Income Tax Credit, for example, that, you know, it's a huge tax expenditure, but aside from that, it's kind of like one of the biggest tools that we have in the United States to alleviate some of the economic difficulties that low-income folks experience. Yet, the IRS's methodology of audit selection seems a bit skewed in terms of the fact that EITC claimants are audited at higher rates than other folks who claim other credits. And there are also kind of like racial and regional disparities with the audit selection process for that. And I think the IRS commissioner has acknowledged as much and have pledged to kind of like address that issue going forward. So that was interesting to me to see, well, on one hand, Congress is allowing folks to have some break in terms of like, we're giving you help through the EITC. But on the other hand, they're kind of like drawing back that money through these audit processes. So that, I think, has a disparity on not only low-income taxpayers, but racial minorities. So Black and Latinx folks tend to be audited at higher rates, and that's just how it shakes out. We've also, related to that, that I saw throughout the class and we've discussed is, you know, things related to the child tax credit, for example, and kind of the challenges that people have in claiming the child tax credit and what they need to prove to the IRS if they're audited that, you know, in fact, they are entitled to this credit. Overall, I think, you know, audits are not fun. Even people who are knowledgeable about taxes and just like high, you know, like once they're audited, like there's kind of a fear that comes in. And I've noticed, and we've talked about it throughout the class, that people tend to have like one of two responses to being audited by the IRS. One, you totally ignore that notice that you got, or you try to seek help in getting it. For low income folks, I think most people tend to kind of like close their eyes, wish it will go away, ignore it. And so just around like, you know, kind of like knowing what to do, and more importantly, knowing where to go to get help, I think we see some of the differences there, even racially.
So did you see some of those dynamics that you mentioned reflected in your own casework in terms of the effect of IRS correspondence or IRS audits on the clients that you dealt with, and how they managed to handle it all?
Yeah, absolutely. Without going into specifics, one case that came to mind readily is just to show, like, you know, taxes and tax administration, it's personal, but there's also a communal level to it. And I say that because for this taxpayer that I'm thinking about that we were helping, you know, like, this person developed a reliance on their refund, right? Through, you know, claiming of child tax credit, earned income tax credit. But that refund was held up because of the audit process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it became a big thing because some of the issues involved in that case extends to kind of communal relationships. Right, this taxpayer working for someone in the community, it's a close-knit community, so the issue is kind of like impacting everyone, and you know, the person, the paid preparer, is also part of the community, so it strains the community in the sense that if the paid preparer, who this taxpayer knows, the person that the taxpayer was working for, who the taxpayer also knows, they're part of the same community, being audited involves kind of like going back to the paid preparer and saying, hey, what did you mess up here? Like, you need to fix this. Or going back to the employer and say, hey, maybe I need different documents or something of that sort. So one aspect is this person needed that money to do what they need to do. People need to pay their bills. People need to buy groceries. Do all the things that you need. It was a huge refund. Not getting that is a struggle. It's a strain financially on the taxpayer. And so, you know, our involvement was sort of like figuring out what went wrong, trying to get documentation to kind of like help the taxpayer resolve this issue, so hopefully that the taxpayer could get a refund, maybe a partial refund or something. But just having that refund held up because of the audit is financially difficult for people who rely on that money to do a myriad of things. It's no fun getting audited.
Now, you mentioned it. It's definitely no fun getting audited. And you mentioned in your answer just now, in your description there of the client cases, a couple of other factors, a couple of other players who are part of this, which are employers and tax preparers. Did you notice any trend or pattern in terms of these external parties that affect these things?
Absolutely. So I didn't realize this was so common until I took the class of the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic, that people think they're doing you a favor when they misclassify you. By that I mean, they say that you're a 1099 worker, you're an independent contractor, when in fact you were a W-2 employee. And people say all kind of weird things, as in the employer, like, hey, you know, you'll get back a bigger refund, like you can claim these credits and deductions. It doesn't help to be misclassified because, you know, there are consequences to that in terms of on the back end, do you get, you won't get your Social Security credits, and you'll be left with paying the full amount of for Social Security taxes, the FICA tax. So that was a trend with my cases. Like, it was a lot of misclassification, work and misclassification. But I also, you know, when we had general discussion in the class, I realized other people had lots of work and misclassification cases. So I don't know if it's a thing unique to Philadelphia. I didn't look at the data, or it's a common trend in certain industries throughout the United States. But that was something I observed a lot with employers, especially in small communities, you know, someone running a grocery store, for example. But even big companies do it as well, misclassify folks, and that really is puts them in a very difficult position. With the paid tax preparers, what I observe from, you know, and obviously it's a small sample size because I didn't have like a large caseload, but from my caseload, what I saw was the tendency to overpromise a refund. So you go in, they're like, oh, you'll get like a huge refund, come here and we'll even advance you the refund. But what they're doing to ensure that you get that refund is claiming credits and deductions that they have no business claiming. And then once that taxpayer's return is flagged, selected for audit, then you're left in with this mess of taxpayer. And the paid preparer is nowhere to be found. In one case, I called that person's business number like multiple times. She never picked up. She never responded. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the taxpayer is like, I don't know where she is. She's gone. But I'm pretty sure now it's tax season. You might be able to find her. And she'll probably tell you that that was on you.
Yes. I mean, it's very frustrating because these are people who are the clients, that is, who are affected by these issues, that are ones that arise through no fault of their own. Audits, in many cases, because it could be random or because someone else claimed the child first. Worker misclassification because of employer misconduct, and tax preparer misconduct because of the tax preparers, of course. And so it really is something that's very vexing. But you were able to help a lot of people in your capacity and help them achieve the some of the goals that they wanted to accomplish. Did you find that you learned a lot about how to interact with clients on a personal level and how to meet them where they are and engage with them about their problems?
Absolutely. So the thing about, I mean, when a client has a legal issue, like, I feel like they're in a vulnerable position. And I think taxes and just things with money are like deeply personal, and people don't like to open up about their affairs, because tax is like really invasive in the sense that, you know, you have to kind of lay bare like what your situation is, like your, you know, kids, household arrangement, your marital status, like you go into personal details about it. And so it's difficult to kind of like get a case and call up the client and say, hey, I'm calling from Temple Low Income Taxpayer Clinic. Like, some people might be happy to hear that someone is calling to help, but they might be like, hey, where is that other person who was helping me? You're like, right. Who are you? And so it's kind of like building a rapport with folks initially, with clients, letting them get comfortable with you and you getting comfortable with their case as well. And, you know, of course, we do lots of it over the phone, so that kind of building rapport is very important. You know, it's a little bit easier when you're meeting in person and they get to see you, get to see them, and they're like, okay, you know, but doing it over the phone initially can be a little bit difficult. But, you know, I think generally clients are kind of like eager to get help, especially when money is at stake and them owing the government lots of money. So I did get to know the clients personally. Even the ones I did not meet in person, I felt like, yeah, I sat with the case for the semester. I know the facts, I know the details, I know the challenges. And sometimes when you do the client's interview, it's like you're trying to get the facts that are relevant to addressing their situation, but they'll open up to you about other things and be like, okay, I'm just going to listen, because sometimes clients just want someone to talk with.
Yes.
Like, you know, they just want to get something off their chest. And this was very interesting, one of my cases where, you know, the issue was pretty, you know, like, I would say straightforward in the sense that these are the facts we need from you. But I felt the client was just frustrated at this point about, like, why, you know, the client had to go through this, and just kind of, like, gave me, like, a 5-year backstory. I was like, whoa. But I was like, thanks for sharing. We'll do our best. We'll see how we can help you. So building the rapport is important. Getting to know the clients, them getting to know you is also important, because, you know, I think the client student, or even student attorney relationship, is really about trust. And so you know, it takes a while to build that up and for people to leave you to do what's in their best interest.
What was something that surprised you the most about the subjects that we covered and the client cases that you worked on, in terms of something that you were kind of not expecting? I know you covered some of that with misclassification, for example, but was there anything else that really stood out to you, something that you didn't anticipate?
This might sound crazy, but what surprised me the most was this. The IRS, it's pretty generous. I mean, so when I called the IRS to get an issue resolved, everyone is so nice. I never expected that. What my kind of mental picture of the IRS is like, these are like very mean people who just want to get the money, and that's all they're about. Give us our money and we're gonna come after you. But like, people were very generous, and especially when I was like, hey, I'm a student at Temple, you know, they ask you for the information, you give them the information. And even when I'm asking for you know, like something which it sounds like what I should be asking for, but not quite, they're like, oh, do you mean to ask for this?
Mm-hmm.
Or what about doing this? And, you know, they're very patient. They're like, all right, here's a fax number, send this thing, we wait a couple of minutes for it to come through. I didn't expect the IRS to be that generous in terms of, like, and just kind.
Mm-hmm.
it's just like, I don't know. I really didn't expect that. And I think every time I called the practitioner on Priority Line, I felt like people were just genuinely helpful. The IRS agents were genuinely helpful, and I appreciated that. And it was pleasantly surprising.
That, I think, is a great thing to end on. And that is really good to hear, because sometimes that is not the case, which is not the fault of the IRS generally, in the sense that, like, of course, any organization, there are going to be people who are not so nice, but it's really good to hear that you had good experiences, and I mostly have had good experiences on the phone as well, and that's a really gratifying thing that makes you feel better. So I'm glad to hear that they were helpful.
Yeah.
That's really good. Well, Randy, thank you so much, and great work, and thanks for sharing your observations.
100%, sure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to Tax Justice Warriors. You can visit our website at taxjusticewarriors.com. Please leave us a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. The views expressed on this podcast are not official opinions of the IRS, the Low Income Taxpayer Clinic Program, or the employers or people who spoke on this program. Your tax situation is unique, so do not take the statements on this program as legal advice. Consult with your tax professional if you seek specific advice. There are now 3 things that are certain in life: death, taxes, and your subscription to the Tax Justice Warriors podcast.